Okay, are we ready, guys? Ready, gang? Hey, what I wanted, a couple of quick things. Someone asked me at the break, you know, they were talking about they also have, you know, deal with an anger question. And it triggered for me. You know, one of the things, if anger is your issue, or if you work with other people that have anger issues, one of the sources of anger is unmet expectations, okay? So if I think everything is going to go well and it doesn't go well, I'm mad, right? Or in my instance, if I want to go home and I want to make it all about me at night and one of my kids comes to me with an issue, right? Now my night has been messed up. And so there are a couple of books that I love, you know, and their opening lines are terrific. One of them is Rick Warren's book. Does anybody know what the opening line in Rick Warren's book is? Purpose Driven Life. Does anybody know that? Okay. Yeah. It's not about you. Okay. One of the greatest opening lines in a book ever. Okay. Another one is a book by a guy named M. Scott Peck, who is a psychiatrist, Yale trained, not a believer, wrote a book called The Road Less Traveled, which is essentially is about love, okay? In the process of that, he became a believer, a very unorthodox believer, so, you know, but he's got a book, it's The Road Less Traveled, it's a terrific book, and the first line in his book, does anybody know what the first line is? Okay, life is difficult. Okay, that's the very opening phrase in his book. And what he starts out by saying is, listen, life is hard. It's filled with problems, okay? The process of overcoming problems is how you grow. And so if you understand that, number one, you lower your expectations. You know, your life is going to be filled with problems. It's not going to be perfect. So you're not surprised when problems happen. And number two, when you do have problems, you see them as opportunities to grow, not as irritants in your side. And so that is a terrific book as well, just as you're sorting through that whole idea of, hey, when I have problems, those are opportunities to grow. You know, one of the things with the Navy SEALs when I was out there is one of the ways they break these guys down is they will make them walk out into the Pacific Ocean and link arms and lie down, and the water's washing over them, and it's freezing, like it's like 55 degrees. And one mindset in that is this is terrible. I hate this. Why am I doing this, right? There are other guys who say, hey, guess what? This water is really cold. So it is having a positive effect on my body, right? Because it is helping reducing the swelling. This is actually making me stronger. I'm so glad I'm in the cold water, okay? Those are two very different perspectives on being out in the cold water. And so that's just it. A lot of this is what your perspective and your mindset. Okay. Second thing someone came up to is they said, hey, if I want to figure out what I'm good at, what are the first couple of steps? And what I said is number one, take some time, sit down and look at your past experiences, where you have succeeded, where you've been encouraged, and what are those things, and are there common denominators? And then step two, go find, you know, 5 or 10 people that are really close to you that will speak the truth to you and ask them, hey, what do you think my strengths are? Okay, and those are two good places to start on that. Now, I realized this morning that we've got people that, you know, if we haven't walked through all of the slides, they're like, hey, you're leaving stuff out on me. So let me just finish a couple of these. One, you know, if you are looking to grow as a self-leader, do not take the strategy, I can do it all by myself. That is a losing strategy. You will grow the fastest, you'll be the most productive if you surround yourself with people who are committed to loving you, helping you, and speaking the truth to you, okay? Two, you know, don't try and be somebody else. One of the big mistakes leaders make is they will try to be the same kind of leader as the person they're replacing or someone they admire, okay? That is a bad idea because the gifts you have are different than the gifts that person has. So, you know, I cannot lead the way that Todd Wagner leads. And so part of this is just realizing, hey, you've got to know who you are and what you're good at, not good at. You've got to like who you are, and you've got to be who you are. Okay, that's a phrase I first heard from a guy named Chuck Swindoll, but I think it's terrific. You know, and so a lot of self-leadership is coming to terms with what am I good at and how do I get myself into a position to use those gifts. Okay. And then this is just a quote from a guy named Bill Hybels. It just says, the best gift you can give people to lead, you lead, whether it's your family, your community, your friends, your coworkers, is a healthy, energized, fully surrendered, focused self. And no one else can do that for you, right? So you've got to do that. So that concludes our self-leadership. Now let's talk about leading other people. Okay. And I want to start off by telling you just a story. So for 10 years when I was here at Watermark, one of the things that I did was every time somebody new started on our staff, okay, they would come meet with me their very first day. And I would, I'd want to know their story. I'd want to know, how they came to faith. I'd want to know how they landed at Watermark, what they hope to get out of their time here. And then I would just say, hey, listen, I've now been here 10 years and I've watched people thrive and I've watched people struggle. And let me pass on three tips for who our culture is and what helps people thrive in our culture. And I would say, number one, Watermark is very loosely managed. Okay. And so if you're going to succeed and thrive here, you've got to have initiative because there's not someone standing over your shoulder telling you what to do all the time. Okay. And the people that do the best are the ones who take responsibility to do their work well. Okay. So that was kind of idea number one, if you want to thrive here. Number two was you better pay attention to your life spiritually because this is hard work. It's spiritually and emotionally exhausting. And, and now you've even got a bigger target on you where, Satan and his evil spirits would love nothing better than to see you totally tank. So pay attention to yourself spiritually. And then the third one was, if you're going to do well in ministry, you have got to understand that the currency in ministry is trust, okay? And we are in the trust business. And why I say that is because if people trust you, you can say incredibly hard things to them, and they'll listen to you, okay? If people don't trust you, you are talking to the hand. And so one of the things is if you are involved in a ministry is you need to understand that everyone shows up here at Watermark with a different level of trust in God and in the church. Some people have had very positive experiences. And so, they believe that God is good. They're convinced of that. They have been a part of great churches. And so you start your relationship with them with a very high trust balance. Okay. Other people will show up at Watermark. They, have had hard things happen to them, so they doubt God's goodness. And the church hasn't, the church that they've been a part of has not served them well. And so you start off at a negative deficit with those people. And so you've got to understand that. And in ministry, so much of it is loving people well so that you earn trust with them, okay? And then you can have a role in their lives in helping them to grow spiritually. Okay, so what I would tell people is that in ministry, if you are in ministry, you've got to walk with Jesus, and then the very next thing is relationally, you need to build trust with people at every opportunity because you're going to need it. You're going to need it when there's a misunderstanding and something goes wrong. You're going to need it when you need to say something hard to people. And so leadership is about you're in the trust building business. Okay, that's true not just in the church, it is true in the business world, okay? If you are going to influence people, if people are going to follow you, there has got to be a level of trust. We're in the trust business. So as we turn our attention to this, that's what we're going to start off talking about. If you are leading other people, okay, your job number one is to build trust with them. And trust is just influence, right? If people trust you, then you can influence them. And there is a book, it's called The Speed of Trust. It's a business book. It's written by a guy named Stephen Covey, who is the son of the Stephen Covey that wrote Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Okay, and in this business book, he says, hey, in business, he calls it the speed of trust because when you have trust in a relationship, speed goes up, cost goes down. And what he means by that is, let's say, you and I are in business and we're doing we're doing a deal, okay? If there is high trust between you and me, we can do that deal on a handshake, okay? So the deal can happen very quickly, and because no lawyers are involved, it's, very inexpensive, Okay. Now let's say, I don't know you, or even worse, I don't trust you. Okay. Now we got to get lots of lawyers involved. Okay. So it slows down the process and it drives the cost up. And so, you know, he writes a whole book that just says, hey, in business, you need to be about building trust, not just relationally, but because it will be better for your business. Does that make sense with everybody? Okay, so with trust, speed goes up, cost goes down. Okay, now, when you are leading other people, the essence from which you lead is trust. You know, do people trust you? And in this book, he talks about, how do I build trust? And he says, listen, you can break it down into two things. On the one hand is integrity, right? Like, are you trustworthy? And he says, that comes down to two things. One, are you honest? And two, do you have the other person's best interests in mind? Or, you know, are you self-dealing? And so if you want to build trust with people, you've got to go out of your way to make sure you're being honest and also to put other people's interests before your own. You know, there's another guy who's written a book, his name is Simon Sinek, that just basically says, leaders eat, does anybody know? Last. You know, and the essence of that is leaders put everybody else's interests before their own. And that builds trust. And when people know that you are for them, right, you can say incredibly hard things to them and they will listen to you. Okay? And so one of the things we want to build is we want to build trust in relationships. So part of that is this whole idea of, you know, am I honest? Do I have your best interest in mind? Okay? So the second part of that is really how competent are you? Like, how good are you at what you're doing? People are not going to follow you if you are lousy, right? You can be honest, you can love them, but if you are a lousy leader, right, it's going to be a lonely team. And so part of this is a getting good at the skills of leadership. So we'll talk a lot about that this morning, but you got to understand it is this kind of integrity piece and it's this competence piece. Okay? Now, if you said, what is the fastest way to build trust with somebody? Would it be through integrity or competence? Anyone want to guess? Okay, so I hear integrity. Does anybody want to take the other side? Okay, what I would say to you is integrity, you know, this whole idea of trust and you being honest, that takes time. Okay? The fastest way to build trust is by doing a great job at something. And people go, oh my goodness, that person knows what they're doing. So if you are in a business setting, if it's your very first day on the job, one of the things you ought to do is you ought to find something that you can do really well and hit it out of the park. And that will begin to build your trust in the organization. Now, correspondingly with time, you can demonstrate that, hey, you're honest and that you have other people's interests at heart. The idea is just that whole character side of trust. It just takes time, okay? Correspondingly, this competence side you can do very quickly, okay? Now, let me flip the question and say, if competence is the fastest way to build trust, what is the fastest way to lose trust? Okay, that's integrity, okay? All you need to do to begin to lose trust is lie to somebody or tell them the half-truth or spin something, right? Or in any other way demonstrate that you don't care about them. What you really care about is you. Okay, that's the fastest way to erode trust. And so as a leader, as you begin thinking about other people, you got to think, okay, the currency of leadership is trust. I have got to be building trust in every relationship, in part through the character side and in part through the competence side. And I've got to be very intentional about that. So at Watermark, you know, my thing was, is listen, here's how you build trust. One, be excellent at your job. You know, that's how you get off the ground. And then two, over time, you need to demonstrate that you're a straight shooter and that you have other people's interests in mind. Okay? And you can do that by, like, if you make a commitment, follow through on the commitment. Okay? When you uphold a commitment, you build trust. When you do something well, people give you more responsibility. And that is just a wheel that you get momentum on, and then it just really helps you out. Okay. And as a leader, there are going to be times either when something goes wrong You know, or you have to say something hard when you're going to need to dip into that leadership. It's almost like a leadership trust bank account. And you can think about that bank account balance going up, and you can think about it going down. And you want to have a lot of, you know, trust in that account so that when something does go wrong or you need to say something hard, you don't bankrupt it. Okay, because if you don't have trust with somebody and then you got to say something hard, or if you don't have trust with somebody and then something goes wrong, you're in trouble. And so that's where we want to start when we talk about this stuff. Okay? So this next thing gets to when I think about Watermark's leaders. And so, one of our jobs was as our community groups, we've got these 1,000 community group leaders. Okay? And what we know is we know that our community groups are only as effective as our leaders. Okay, so the key leverage point is if we can make our leaders better, we're going to make our whole group better. Okay, and so if we lined up all 1,000 of our community group leaders, and this time down here is our very worst leader. Think about how bad you would have to be the very worst out of 1,000. Okay, and then all the way down here, right, again, we've got our very best leader. This is the person that people would mistake for Jesus every once in a while. Okay, and I was to say to you, okay, come up on the stage. And where are you in this continuum? And then if I was to say, hey, what can we learn from lining up all these leaders? Okay, what we could learn was this. If we took the top 20%, the top 20, you know, so the 200 best leaders, and we said, what is true about them? Okay, what do you think would be true about them? I mean, like if you had to say, what's the common denominator that connects all those people? Does anybody have any guesses? Okay, this was hard, right? Because we could come up with like 40 things. Okay, but remember, what we're trying to do is focus on what are the two or three things that make the biggest difference. Okay, what you'd learn down here at these leaders is they naturally figure it out on their own, right? Like you could take these people down here and you could throw them in the desert with a Bible and 12 strangers and come back like 3 months later and they would have a functioning community. I mean, they just figure it out. Okay. Correspondingly, what is true, like we took the bottom 10% of leaders, like the worst 100, and we said, what's true about them? You know what would be true about them? There is something in their lives that sabotages every relationship they have. And in some way, shape, or shame, in some kind of like way, shape, or form, it's about them all the time. And so, what we need to do with leaders down here, like in a business, what would you do with your worst leaders? Okay, this is not a trick question. You would invite them to find another place of employment, wouldn't you? Okay? Okay. Now, what if you're the church? Okay? Here's the problem in the church is I'm not going to use the word fire. Fire's not the right word. But you can relieve someone of duty for their responsibility. But a church is an organization. It is also a family. Okay? And you can't fire people from your family. And furthermore, God says, hey, guess what? You know, every person matters to me, no matter where they are on this line. You need to love, encourage, shepherd, and develop every single one of them. Okay? So what's the key to this group down here to doing that? Okay? It is someone who loves them enough to say, guess what? You are behaving in a way that is sabotaging every relationship you're in. And if you don't get that fixed, it's going to haunt you for the rest of your life. And so a lot of times, right, we would say, hey, you need to figure out what that thing is and you need to wrestle it to the ground and deal with it. And so a lot of times, you know, we've got Regen. And Regen is just our ministry for anybody who's got a hurt, a habit, or a hang up who is negatively impacting their life. And we'd say, look, go deal with that and then come back. You know, and then when they do come back, they're not down in that quadrant. Okay. Now in the middle is like 70% of our leaders. And what's true about this group is they want to be good leaders, but they are not going to figure it out on their own. And because leadership is hard, there's like 100 things you could do to be a good leader, right? They need someone to come alongside of them and say, if you do these two or three things, this is going to make the biggest difference. And this is going to have an impact. And if you can come alongside those leaders and teach them that, you're going to move them this direction. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay, so the key then is trying to figure out, what are those two or three things? And so, you know, you could pick up, let's say, the top 20 leadership books, and every book would have a different set of things, okay? And so what I would say is this isn't the only three things, but if you do these three things well, they're effective, okay? So our very best leaders, the ones that are way down here, do three things really well, and this is what they do. Number one, they initiate. And by that, I mean they take responsibility for the relationship, okay? If something is wrong in the relationship, they are very quick to go and resolve it. And so, you know, in my marriage, you know, Jeannie and I get sideways from time to time about all kinds of things, okay? And at some other time, I can tell you the single biggest disagreement we had in 21 years of marriage, right? And it's actually, if I had the time, I would tell you that story. But if you look at the Bible, and what the Bible says is, hey, John, guess what? In this relationship, you know, I want you to be a leader, not just a part of it. And part of leading means when there is an issue that's wrong, you look to resolve it, okay? And look, it may or may not be your fault. And what I would say is most of the time it usually is, okay? It may or not be your fault, but I'm holding you accountable for fixing it. And when I understand that, right, now I take the initiative and say, yeah, you know what? It seems like we've got this problem. What are we going to do about it? And so our best leaders, they initiate, right? They don't wait for people to call them. They call other people, okay? They go out of their way to build relationships, to deepen relationships, right, and to help people grow. And so part of that is just like, hey, if I'm in a relationship with someone, I am responsible for the quality of that relationship. And so if it's not what I want it to be, what am I going to do to fix it? Okay, may not be my fault it's not in a good position, but I'm responsible. Does that make sense, the difference between whether it's your fault and whether you're responsible for making it better? Okay, that serves as the foundation for what a lot we're going to talk of today. But our best leaders, they initiate. So they reach out to people, they call them, they text them, they pray for them, right? They go, they look for ways to serve them. That's the first thing they do. The second thing they do is they love and encourage people. And so this group of people makes you really glad that you're there. And, you know, if you feel like the group really misses you, if you don't show up, what's going to happen? You know, you're going to be more inclined to show up. And there is this sense in which our best leaders, the people around them feel like those leaders are for them. And if people feel like you are for them, it opens up all kinds of opportunities to lead, develop, and grow them. Okay, but that is really, really, really important. And so if we carry that to a business context, what I would say is it sounds kind of crazy to say, well, you've got to love the people that you work with, okay? But when you talk about what love is action designed, right, for the good of others. You want what's best for them. You're committed to developing them. You're speaking the truth to them, okay? You are for them. And there are lots of different ways that you can behave in ways where you are making deposits in people's lives so that they trust you, okay? And when they trust you, now you can effectively lead. And then the third thing that they do is they are catalysts. And by that, I mean, you know, some of our mediocre community groups are what I would call supper clubs, okay? And a supper club is when everyone gets together and they tell stories and they have fun together, okay? But there's no real talk about how are we growing or how are we not growing. And so our best leaders are catalysts, okay? And so what they do is they get alongside of other people and they say to them, hey, guess what? Here's what you're doing really well. Keep doing that stuff. Or man, I see this in you. This is awesome. Let me tell you how to take that to the next direction. And correspondingly, they'll say, and hey, guess what? It looks to me like here are some obstacles for you that you need to get past. If you only get past those obstacles, okay, you will be in a much better situation. And so our best leaders naturally do that. They're always thinking about what is someone good at? Where do they need to develop? How can I help them take the next step? You know, are they in the right spot? And so there is that mindset where you're walking around saying, okay, how am I loving the people that are around me? And what's the next step for them to grow and develop? And then I mean, very intentionally move into that space. So let me give you an example of that. Several years ago, this goes back a couple of jobs. I had a guy that worked underneath me who was as good at what he did as anybody I know. I mean, he was awesome. He had a deep expertise in the area. He thought strategically. He operated with a lot of autonomy, okay? But there was one thing that he did that was killing him. And that was when something would go wrong in his area, he would lose his marbles, okay? And so what would happen is he would get upset and he would blow off steam and he would blame people, okay? And so now I'm his leader. And I would watch this happening, okay? And if you are a leader, the one thing you cannot do in stressful situations is lose your marbles, okay? Because everyone's watching you. And so the more stressed out things are, the more calm you've got to be. And so part of that is me coming alongside of him and saying, hey, listen, you know, I'm gonna call him Jim. His name wasn't Jim, but Jim, you know, your expertise in this area is outstanding, right? That makes you great. You know, second, you think strategically. And third, you know what? You operate with a lot of autonomy. You are terrific. You can go so far in this job and, you know, you've got a very bright future. Okay. Now, let me talk about the one area where I think you need to develop. And it's this area. And let me tell you what's wrong. This is when something goes wrong and you lose your marbles, okay, you dishearten your team. And no one wants to be on your team. Okay? And if you don't fix that, it's gonna affect you the rest of your life. And oh, by the way, hey, guess what? If you're doing that at work, what do you think is happening at home? You think that's showing up at home? Absolutely, it's showing up at home. Okay? So if I love this guy, okay, I now need to speak truth to him. Hopefully I've built up enough trust with him that I can say to him, hey, guess what? You can't do that. In fact, the more crazy it gets, okay, the more calm you've gonna be. And on top of that, guess what? Anytime anything goes wrong in your area, whose fault is it? It's your fault, okay? Anytime something goes right in your area, who gets the credit? Everybody else, okay? And one of the things that is true about leaders is when something goes wrong, they accept the responsibility, okay? When something goes right, they give all the credit away, okay? That's how you build trust as a leader. And so, as a leader, what we're gonna do is we're gonna talk about four-way leadership, but the things you gotta keep in mind is, am I taking responsibility for the relationship? Am I initiating? That's number one. Number two, am I loving and encouraging? Do people know that I am for them? Am I actively building trust? And number three, am I a catalyst? Am I making the people around me better because I'm in their life? Because I'm an encourager, and I am also willing to point out ways that they can get better. Okay, does that make sense? Okay, now what I'll say is, you know, one of the most valuable lessons I learned in this is as a kindergarten soccer coach, okay? So I played soccer up through high school, so I kind of know about the game. You know, I at least know enough to coach five-year-olds. And so I inherit this five-year-old girl soccer team. And, you know, I've got a couple of kids. Usually they would have older brothers or for some reason they're super competitive. Like they would be all about the competition, right? And then I would have other little girls that they were just out there looking for flowers, okay? And it's my job to coach them. And you know what I learned about that experience? I learned that the most important thing I could do in coaching five-year-olds was love and encourage them, okay? Because if they enjoyed being out there at practicing the games, then they would want to stick with it and they would get better, okay? And so it all hinged on, did they enjoy the experience at 5 years old? And what I began to realize was if I let it work, like I coached my five-year-olds, I would be a lot more effective leader, right? Because one of the things that happens, especially if you are a high-performance leader, is you can convince yourself that when someone is doing excellent, that's what they're supposed to do. That's why they're paying them the big bucks. And you forget the importance of loving and encouraging people, okay? And that is so important. And so, you know, when you go into your next leadership role, just think about it like, hey, I'm coaching five-year-olds, okay? And my number one job is to make sure they love it, because if they love it, they will be engaged and they will work on it and they will stay in it. And now I can develop them, okay? So those are the things we're gonna wanna talk about. And then we're going to talk about four-way leadership, because most people, when they think about leadership, they think about leading the people underneath them. So in your family situation, they think about leading their kids, right? In their work situation, they think about leading their subordinates. In volunteer organizations, they think about leading the people that are in the organization underneath them. And what I would tell you is I think leadership is four ways, okay? Number one, you've got to lead yourself. We've talked about that in the first section. Number two, you've got to lead up. You've got to lead your boss. And we'll talk a little bit about how you do that effectively, okay? Because you're responsible for the quality of that relationship. Okay, third, you've got to lead down your subordinates. And fourth, we'll talk about how do we lead our peers. Okay, so those are people that we work with, but they don't have to listen to us. Okay, so now influence becomes really important if you're going to grow and develop and help them. Okay, so let's dive into this. And let's start with talking about leading your boss, which is the area that people think about leading the least. Okay, and so what I would tell you is, you know, you can think about the best boss you've ever had, and you can think about the worst boss you've ever had. And what we would say is we can distinguish what makes someone a great boss or a worst boss, but whether you have a good relationship or not, okay, it may or may not be your fault, but it is your responsibility to make the quality of that relationship good. And so you've got to lead in a way that you are strengthening that relationship up. And so we'll talk about that, right? So what I would say is if your relationship isn't what you want it to be, it may or may not be your fault, but it's absolutely your responsibility to make it better. And we'll talk about how you do that, okay? And then you always need to be for the mission of the organization and for the success of your boss, okay? So as long as it's not unethical or illegal, okay, you want to be committed to helping your boss and the mission of the organization. So you're balancing those values as you're looking to do that. And so when you think about great bosses, okay, what do great bosses do well? Does anybody want to jump in and... Okay, they're encouragers. They communicate clearly. They do what well? Yep, they lead well, okay. They lead by example. Provide an environment. Okay, all of those things are true and all of those things we'll touch on. Remember, the key here is we would say there's probably 50 things they do. What are the two or three that if they do consistently will make the biggest difference, okay? And we'll do that when we talk about leading our subordinates. But what I'll tell you is with bosses, okay, great bosses set clear expectations. So they tell you this is how you get an A. This is what you should be working on to succeed, okay? Lousy bosses... don't communicate expectations well. And so they have them, you just don't know what they are. And so what'll happen is you'll start a job and you'll think, oh, you know what, the three keys to me being really successful in my job is I gotta do task A, task B, and task C. And if I do those really well, then I will be succeeding, okay? And so you focus on those for 6 months, then it comes time for your review, and you go in and their boss says, hey, how do you think you're doing? You say, I think I'm doing great. I'm doing A, and I'm doing B, and I'm doing C really well, okay? And the boss says, hey, you know what? I agree, you're doing A really well. But you know what? You're not doing E down here. You're not doing really well. You're not doing very well at that. And down here on S, you haven't even thought about S, okay? And the employee goes, what do you mean E and S? I thought I was supposed to be focused on A, B, and C. And so now all of a sudden you've got a huge disconnect and trust just goes way out the window. And so whatever trust there was, it is now zero. Okay, because the boss has expectations. They are just not communicating them clearly. And so that's one thing you've got to understand. In fact, let's go to the next slide here. You've got to know what the expectations are, okay? So a great boss is going to be very clear saying, this is how you get an A. If you do this, and you do this, and you do this, you will get an A, okay? Lousy bosses don't communicate that very well, okay? It is your responsibility as an employee to understand, what are the expectations of my boss, okay? And so if I'm starting a job or I'm under someone, I'm going to go, hey, tell me, you know, for the first 6 months, like, what are the three most important things that I can succeed, you know, that I can do to, you know, deliver value and add to the organization and get us where we want to go? Okay. What are those three things? Okay. And then I'm going to write them down when he says them or she says them. Okay. And then I'm going to send an email to him saying, hey, man, thank you so much for that first meeting. Love the conversation. You know, just to clarify, here's what I heard you say about the three most important ways that I can add value over the next 6 months, okay? And I'm, okay, what I'm trying to do is clarify expectations. I want to understand what they think is important and have it match up with what I think is important. Okay. And if I can align those things, I have now just removed, you know, like 50% of the problems you have with the boss. Okay. And so I've got to clarify those expectations. The second thing I've got to figure out is what is their work style? Okay. Because what is true in life is that if you are the subordinate, you have got to adjust to the boss's work style. Okay. Now, a lot of times, you know, people will get into a job and they will think it's the boss's job to adapt to them, okay? If you've been in the marketplace for 15 years or longer, right, how often have you seen that work, okay? It doesn't. And you could say, hey, as an employee, my boss should adapt to me and, you know, my needs and the way I work, and okay? Good luck with that strategy, okay? So one of the things that I want to tell people, especially young people, is guess what? You better figure out how your boss works, and you better adapt your style to them, okay? And when I say that, I simply want to say, like, so for example, when I worked here for Todd Wagner, okay? So Todd was my boss here, and very quickly what I realized is if I wanted to suck all of the life out of Todd, okay, what I needed to do was schedule a meeting with him every week to talk about what I was doing. Okay, like if I had, like, Todd, if you want me to be effective, you and I need to meet every Tuesday from 2 to 3 p.m., okay? That would drain the life out of him, okay? So Todd is a person that kind of on that structured, unstructured balance, he loves the unstructured side. And he would rather have, like, 30 things to do and be able to do them in whatever order he feels like, as opposed to have 6 things to do but have to do them in a specific order, okay? And if I wanted to drain him, all I needed to say to him was this, hey, Todd, you got to show up for a meeting every single week and spend an hour with me, okay? That might be how my style, I liked it. Okay, it's not how he operated. He operated best if I kept a running list of items, you know, that I need to talk about. So here's things you need to know about. Here's things I need a decision on. Here's things I'd like your input on. Okay, I just kept a list. And, you know, once a week, twice a week, you know, depending on what was going on, he would stick his head in my office and he'd go, hey, how's it going? Okay. At which point I knew he's ready to have a conversation. Okay. And so now's my chance, you know, where I could say, hey, you know, do you have a couple minutes? You know, I'll update you. Or, you know, is this a drive-by or are you coming to check up? So, you know, I'd gauge how much time he had. And then I'd say, hey, listen, let me give you an update. And we would just run through the list. Okay, that's how he liked to operate. If you are going to have a great relationship with your boss, you got to understand that, right? Some bosses, they like to talk on the phone. They like emails. They like texts. How do they like communication? You know, you've got to understand those things. Another thing that I did, you know, is you put a graph on a chart. And on one dimension, and this is, you know, the organization, okay? And on the horizontal dimension, you put how important is it to the organization, okay? And so down at this side, it'd be, it's not that important strategically. And on this other side was, it's very important strategically, okay? And then on the vertical axis was, you know, does my boss care about this? And at the bottom was no, and at the top was yes, okay? And what I would tell you is you should take all the issues and, you know, you've got and put them in a box like that. And so one box will be issues that are not important that your boss doesn't care about, okay? And are those easy or hard to deal with? They're easy to deal with, right? Because they're not that important and he really doesn't care, and so I can make whatever decision I want to make, okay? Correspondingly, if the decision is really important and my boss cares a lot, that's also very easy because I can get him engaged. You know, what is harder is what if something is important to the organization and my boss doesn't care about it? Okay, now I got an issue because I've somehow got to get him engaged in it, and he may not, you know, have a strong perspective. Okay, the other one where you get into trouble is, let's say you think something is not important to the organization, but your boss cares about it. I mean, okay, good luck convincing your boss they shouldn't care about it. I mean, good luck with that, okay? So let me give you an example. When we were building this building and the building next door, so this goes back a number of years. Has anybody been in our chapel over there? Okay, so the chapel was designed to walk into it and to have, in one sense, that, hey, this is like 100 years old. you know? And yet at another sense, you know, it feels comfortable and safe, and there's a sense of community. And so we wanted to use pews, you know, because that gave this sense that it's older, you know, rather than individual chairs. And so, but Todd wants the pews to look like they're 100 years old, okay? And so now, let me ask you, from a strategic standpoint, how important is that to the organization? You know, what the pews look like? Is anybody going to come to Jesus because of what the pews look like? Okay. Probably not, but he cares. And so, you know, we went through several ideas and none of it was, he just didn't want to go out and buy new ones. So here's what we finally did. We finally found some wood in a bog in Louisiana, okay, that was like, it had been underwater forever, okay? And then we hired a guy who hand scraped, like, you know, wood floors to scuff them up and make them look like they're 100 years old. And we put them in there, okay? Now, the great thing was it actually cost less than actually going out and buying them, you know, because the wood was real cheap and all kinds of, okay. But, and I will tell you, if you ever walk in there, they're terrific. You won't notice them, you know, because it's just part of the atmosphere, but it just lends itself well to that, okay? But that was clearly an instance where, okay, I didn't think it was that strategically important, okay? But he cared, okay? And if you're gonna have a good relationship with your boss, good luck convincing them they shouldn't care about something, okay? I'm just telling you, you know, the better answer is if they care, do not surprise them, okay? So you wanna set clear expectations with your boss and make sure that those are clear. That's number one. Number two, you better know what their working style is, you know? And there, very specifically, you wanna make sure you understand in that grid, is it important to the organization and do they care? You wanna be able to put different things in those boxes and then respond to that, okay? That will help you a lot. And then this last thing is you don't wanna surprise them. No surprises. And so the key for me there, which I learned with Todd over time, was I learned what he cared about and what he didn't care about. And if you know that, and then you know what's important to the organization and what's not, you now have a good sense of how not to make sure he's not surprised. And if you go through time and you don't surprise your leader, you're now building trust. Okay, does that make sense to everybody? Okay, so that is working with your boss. So your boss may be good, they may be bad, doesn't matter. You are responsible for the quality of the relationship, clarify expectations, right? And adapt to their work style, and then make sure you're not surprising them on the end. And then just be loyal and faithful and get your stuff done. Any questions about that one? Okay, all right, so let's move on. Okay, this, by the way, is just a passage out of Colossians 3 where it says, whatever you do, you know, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men, since you know you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. And so one of the things as believers that when we go to work, one of the things that's really helpful for me is this, you know what? I work for a guy named Mark now. You know, Mark is my boss, okay? But even more important, the Lord is my boss, okay? He is the one I'm serving. And so when I show up at work, right, I want to be excellent, not just for my earthly boss, but for the Lord. And so that is just great motivation for me as a believer to want to be excellent. You know, the Lord calls us to be excellent, and the Lord calls us to make a difference. Okay, so now let's talk about leading down. Okay, so now you've got people who are underneath you, and the same things apply here. Right, as applied up. So if we want to lead people, leading down, one, we got to set clear expectations for them, okay? So we've got to say to them, listen, there are 100 things you could do on this job, okay? But for the next 6 months or the next 3 months or the next month, these are the 3 most important. And so whatever else you do, you got to get these 3 things done. And we want to focus people on that. And the good thing is if those 3 things get done, most of the other stuff will take care of itself. If those 3 things don't get done, nothing else matters because you're going to have a mess. Okay, so we want to be very clear. You know, I'm always wanting to say whenever I'm with someone, okay, here are the 2 or 3 or 4 things that you should be working on right now. Okay, second thing, know your people. Okay, so this again is the inverse of, you know, knowing how your boss likes to work. You've got to understand your people. And very specifically, over time, you've got to figure out what are people good at, okay, and what are their weak spots. And the job of a leader is once you identify what people are good at over time, is to move them into positions where they can capitalize on their strengths. Okay? And so if you think about this, let's think about this from a football coaching basis. So there is a university in Texas that recently hired someone for $75 million. Does anybody know what university? Okay, all right, okay, A&M. A&M just hired a football coach, 5 years, $75 million, okay? Why did they do that? Okay, they can't win. Okay. It's because, that's partly right, not like they want to, right? But they're convinced that if they could do just one thing that would make the biggest difference on that football program, it's hiring a leader, okay? So, Jimbo Fisher, he's now in that role. He's got to do three things exceedingly well to make that football team better, okay? What's he got to do well? Okay, he's got to recruit. Okay, that's the first thing he's got to do. Okay, what else has he got to do? Okay, he's got to train people. So he's got 20 hours a week mandated by the NCAA, so he's got to get the most development he can in 20 hours of training a week, right? So most college football programs, they divide an hour and a half practice into 18 5-minute increments, okay? And every 5 minutes, a horn goes off, and they change stations. And so the coaches stay up late into the night figuring out, I've got 18 chances to make this football player better today. What am I going to focus on? Okay. So the best coaches can take that 20 hours a week and they can get the most development out of it. Okay. So they've got to recruit, they've got to train, they've got to do one other thing. What's the third thing they've got to do well? Okay, this one's not obvious, so... Okay, game plays, I would say that's one of the things they got to do well. Say, even before that, okay, what they've got to do, what? They've got to hire well. That's true too. I would say that's absolutely a part of it. Okay, but what I would say is the best football coaches, when they recruit great athletes out of high school, guess what? All of those athletes are quarterbacks, running backs, defensive backs, you know, okay? What great football coaches do is they can look at someone and see what that player is good at. And then they can put them in a spot on the field that allows them to excel. So they can say, hey, guess what? In high school, you were a quarterback. But guess what? You are now our new receiver, wide receiver. Because I see skills in you that will make you excellent as a wide receiver. Or guess what? In high school, you were a tight end. But guess what? You're now a defensive lineman. Because the way you explode off the ball is going to make you great in that spot. Okay. The best football coaches can look at someone, see what they're good at, and then they can put them in a spot on the field that takes advantage of those talents. Okay, and so there are stories in college football of guys coming in and they haven't had time to recruit their own guys, but the teams immediately get better in years 1 and 2 because they have an ability to put guys in the right spots and then to coach them and make them better. And then what happens is, over time, their recruiting catches up, and then they get all the great athletes in. Does that make sense? Okay. So there are other stories of coaches that that are lousy at finding the right, where does the guy go on the field? And because of that, their teams are playing out of position. And they, even though they're great recruiters, they always underperform as coaches. Okay. So years ago, there was a coach at Notre Dame, Jerry Faust, okay, who was a great high school coach in Cincinnati, Ohio, had won, you know, just an unbelievable number of high school championships, largely because, right, he had better talent. Kids wanted to go play at his high school because they knew that was the path to playing in college. Okay, he gets to college for 5 years in a row. He has the number one recruiting class in all of college football. For 5 years in a row, his team underperforms every year. And the people that really know, when they're looking back on it, and then he gets fired, okay? The people that are looking back on it say, he had players playing out of position, and that's why his teams weren't great, okay? So if you are leading people, you know, you got to be responsible for recruiting. You know, so anytime you got a chance to make a hire or get a volunteer on your board, you know, you're going after talent. The second thing you got to do is figure out what they're good at so you know where to play them on the field. What job responsibilities should they have? Who do you need to put around them so that they're functioning well as a team? And then the third thing you got to do is you got to make them better. And I mean, you got to make them better like in 20 hours a week if you're a football coach. And that's why they're paying Jimbo Fisher $15 million a year to do those three things. Okay. Now, when we talk about leading people, okay, we've got to set clear expectations. The next thing we got to do is we got to know what they're good at. And again, you know, how we talked about with ourselves is you can't show up and in like 3 hours figure out what someone is good at. Okay. You got to watch them over time. And you've got to see them in environments and give them responsibilities and see where they naturally excel and where they struggle. And over time, you begin to get a sense of who's in the right position and who's not, okay, based on what their giftedness is. And so you got to know your people, you got to get them into the right positions, and then you've got to coach them, okay? So now, if we talked about coaching, we could have a 3-day seminar on how you be a good coach, okay? And we could talk about 100 things that good coaches do, okay? But what I want to do is, you know, remember the theme of this class is what are the 2 or 3 things that are going to have the biggest impact, okay? So let's talk about those, okay? And this is that list, okay? So there's 3 questions that you want to ask, okay, that will help you get better as a coach today. And the first one is what is someone doing that is adding value to your team, to your organization, that is making a difference where they are succeeding? And you want them to keep doing those things. And so what you want to be able to do is whenever you're with them, you want to say to them, hey, you know what? You have a deep expertise of the content knowledge. And that's awesome. And you know what? In fact, that's one of your greatest strengths. I want to make sure you stay on the cutting edge of that. Keep doing that because that is what makes you good at what you do. Okay, and when you reinforce that with people, what you reinforce gets repeated. Okay? And so I want to be very intentional about figuring out what it is that people are doing well and adding value to my team, and I want to reinforce that. Okay, and so that's this. Listen, here's what you're doing that's good. Keep doing that stuff. Second, okay, every person has something that they're doing right, that is getting in the way of them being great, okay? And sometimes, you know, it's they're focused on the wrong stuff, you know? Or they're too black and white and, you know, or they always have to get their way. Or, you know, it could be 100 things, but you got to figure out what that is. And you got to say, hey, you know what? If you want to get even better, there is one thing that you're doing that I think is inhibiting your growth. And if you deal with that one thing, it will make a material difference, okay? So go back to my story. Remember with the guy I told you about, the guy who was great at what he did? He had a deep technical expertise. He thought strategically. He was a self-starter. But when something went wrong, he lost his marbles, okay? So what I need to say to him is, listen, if you want to be a really great leader, if you want people on your team to love working for you, you got to stop losing your marbles, okay? And when something goes wrong, right, you've got to, the more wrong it goes, the more calm you've got to be. Because people are looking at you, and if you are losing your marbles, they're going to lose their marbles, okay? If you're calm, people are going to be thinking, like, okay, maybe this isn't so bad. We will get through this, okay? They're watching you. So that's with him. I need to say to him, hey, guess what? This one thing, if you stop doing that, you will get dramatically better as a leader. And here's what that one thing is. And so when I am with people, I'm constantly watching. What are they doing well? And correspondingly, what are they doing that's inhibiting their effectiveness? Okay. Third question, what are they not doing that if they started doing, what one thing would make the biggest difference in their performance? Okay. So if I can ask these 3 questions, what should they keep doing? What should they stop doing? What should they start doing? Now I can coach and develop people. Okay. And what's great about these is, are these hard questions? They're not hard to ask. And the great thing is now you can teach other people how to lead. This is how you coach. And so often, even our best leaders, remember how I said, you know, our worst leaders are down here, our best leaders are down here. The ones that intuitively figure it out, they're not really sure what they do that makes them so good. And that's why, you know, there's like in the athletic world, there's lots of great athletes that are just outstanding, but they're not very good coaches because they can't teach other people how to do it. OK, Okay? And what we're wanting to do today is say, not only this is how you improve your leadership, but this is how you develop other leaders. Right? And when you teach them, when they build teams, they got to recruit well, they got to get people into the right spots, and they got to coach them. And when they're coaching them, it's about what should they keep doing, what should they stop doing, what should they start doing. Okay? And then I got to figure out, are they in the right spot on the field so that I can get them into the right spots. Okay? That is not, that's an easy conceptual framework, but I can teach that to people. And if I can teach it, remember how I said, all of our leaders, there's a big chunk, the middle 70%, they want to be good. They're not going to figure it out on their own. We've got to coach them. Okay, if we can teach them to do this, we will make them materially better. So any questions about this? Okay, let me just bounce back. This slide, developing people, here's just a couple of other tips. One is talking about the four phases of leadership. And so when you are teaching someone how to do something, okay, there is a process that you want to go through. So the first step is hey, listen, we're going to do this together, okay? I'm going to do it, and you're going to watch me. And you're going to learn from watching me, okay? That's phase one leadership, okay? Phase two is I'm going to do it, and you're going to help me. So I'm going to give you this one small piece of this, and I want you to practice and develop your skills. Then we move to phase three. Phase three is, guess what? You're going to do it, but I'm going to help you. Tell me whatever you want me to help out. I'm happy to jump in. And phase four is you're going to do it, and I'm going to watch you. Okay? That's how you develop people along the way. Here's where that breaks down. And let's see if we've got a slide. Here it is, okay? When it comes to delegating and teaching people how to do things, what often happens is there's this continuum. And on one end, there are people who are very hands-on, okay? And they are loath to give away any of the actual doing of the task to them because no one else can do it better, okay? So they would describe themselves as a hands-on leader, okay? Everyone around them would say they're a control freak, okay? But they would just say, I'm hands-on. Okay, at the other end is the people that like to think of themselves as delegator. They have no problem giving responsibility away. Okay, now, they would just say, hey, I'm a great delegator. Everyone else would say, hey, you're an absent boss. Like, where are you? Okay? And so what I would tell you is all of us are wired to be somewhere on this continuum. Okay? And when you look at your leadership, are you more inclined to be down here where you're hands-on and you struggle giving up responsibility? Or are you on the other end where you're like, hey, you know, I'm glad you're here. I guess I'm going to go catch a movie, you know? And what I would just say is listen, you've got to tailor your leadership to whoever it is that you're handing off that responsibility to. And so you've got to be very intentional about saying, if someone is brand new, I'm going to do it. They're going to watch. Okay. And we're going to do that for a while. And then I'm going to do it and they're going to help me. And we're going to do that for a while. And then, you know, they're going to do it, and I'm going to help them. And then finally, they're going to do it all by themselves. Okay? And how fast you move across that continuum just depends on how complex it is what you're trying to teach them. So, you know, there's a fun story at Watermark where there is a guy named Jim Wimberly on our staff. Does anybody know who he is? Okay, so there's some hands going up. Okay, so Jim is kind of like everybody on our staff looks up to Jim. Jim is 76 years old, okay? He spent 30 years kind of in the HR world, okay? And then came on Watermark staff. And he now leads our pastoral care ministries. And so, but you know, Jim doesn't necessarily have a theology degree. I mean, Jim's main qualification is he loves Jesus and he's faithful. And so he gets on our staff. He's the head of pastoral care. So, you know, the first time a funeral comes up, Todd Wagner says to Jim, hey, Jim, you know, this person died. I want you to do the funeral because you're our pastoral care guy. Okay. Jim says, I've never done a funeral. So Todd says, okay, great. The first one, I'll do it. And you just come and watch. Okay. And so Todd does the funeral. Jim is taking his, you know, scribbling notes as fast as he can. Okay? And then afterwards, debriefs Todd and says, hey, Todd, what are the keys to doing a great funeral? Okay. The next time a funeral comes along, Todd does it again, but he says, hey, Jim, this time I want you to do this section of the funeral. Okay. And over time, You know, as they do a number of funerals, it gets to the point where, you know, Jim, you're now in charge. I'll come and help you. You want me to do the eulogy? Great. You want me to meet with the family beforehand? Great. Just tell me what you want me to do. And then finally, now Jim's doing them all by himself. And Todd has walked him down through those four phases of leadership and developed that skill in him. But it's an intentional kind of thing. And so when you've got someone on your team who needs a skill that they do not have, you're now in charge of teaching them. And you want to walk them through those four phases of leadership, okay? So if you can just remember two things, those three questions, start doing, stop doing, keep doing, and the four phases of leadership, okay? You now have just gotten materially better in leading the people underneath you, okay? So here's a question for you. Over time, if you can, if you're going to build a great team, okay, remember what we said is you've got three levers to do that. Number one, recruiting. Okay. Number two, getting the people in the right spots. And number three, developing them. Okay. Which do you think is the most powerful of those levers to building a great team? Anybody want to guess? Development? Okay. So, and what I would tell you, I think, is the answer that I hear most of the time, because there's tremendous power in developing people. And we would say, guess what? You know, if you want to build a good team, you better be good at all three, okay? But what I think I would tell you is over time, what would a great football coach tell you? What's the key to building a great team? Okay, they would say that. I think they would say, you got to have great recruits. Okay, if I don't have the talent to start with, I can never end up with a good product. So again, think about players on a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 is terrible and 10 is awesome. Okay, if I recruited somebody, kid is an 8, I can develop into a 10. If I recruited a kid who's a 4, I can make him a 6. Okay, and so what I would tell you is that recruiting is everything. You know, when it comes to building a great team over time. And because of that, hiring is super important. And if you are in a position where you are hiring, okay, that is the single most important thing you do in your organization. And if you get the right people and you get them into the right spots, 80% of your leadership headaches just went away. If you've got the wrong people or they're in the wrong spots, okay, you now just inherited a whole bunch of problems. And so, we'll talk a little bit about that, but you got to understand that when we're working with people, how important that hiring, you know, in this third session, after this next break, we'll talk about that, okay? But just understand, that's how I'm developing people. Okay, so let me go back here. There's our keep doing, stop doing, start doing, okay? Four phases of leadership. How do people learn? We had someone on Watermark staff one time that came to us from Dell Computer, and they were in Dell's learning group. And they said, hey, you know what? Dell has spent millions of dollars trying to figure out how do adults learn. And what they've kind of come out of that saying is that 70% of what adults learn, they learn on the job by doing it. Okay? 20% they learn by watching other people who are good at it. And 10% they learn in formalized training classes. Okay? And so if we want to develop leaders, you know, and we know that, right? The worst way we could probably do it is by having a class like this, okay, where we're going to spend 3 hours together. And the best way is to say, okay, people learn on the job. So one of the things Watermark does, for example, is every year with young leaders, we have a residence program where we'll have, you know, 15 to 20 people come in who are usually just out of college or, you know, in their mid-20s, who spend a year with us to learn how to lead and develop and build. And that works so well because that's how people learn. So if you are structuring learning opportunities, what you want to do is you want to get people in the water. Once they're in the water, you can teach them how to swim, okay? But we're not going to teach people how to swim out of the pool. Let's get them in the water first. And, oh, by the way, once people are in the water, their need to learn how to swim goes way up, you know? And so now they're motivated, okay? And so all of that's just to say, look, as you're developing people, one of the things Watermark does, one of the things that we do at the company I work with, is we are trying to give people responsibility because we know that's when they learn best. Okay. Now, what I want to do is put guardrails on it so that they don't get themselves in real trouble. Okay, but as long as they've got, you know, kind of the guide rails on it, it's not going to go too far off the road. So, but I'm being very intentional about trying to get people into opportunities where they're going to learn more quickly because I'm trying to accelerate their learning experience. And then this last principle is just called finding storms. So I grew up, I told you my dad was a Navy doctor at the Naval Academy. The Naval Academy is in Annapolis, Maryland. And the thing that Annapolis is known for besides the academy is sailing. Okay. It is one of the big sailing capitals kind of on the eastern seaboard. And it's right on the Chesapeake Bay, and a ton of people who love sailing kind of live around there and go sailing in the Chesapeake Bay all the time. And the great thing about the Chesapeake Bay is that you don't get violent weather in the Chesapeake Bay. You know, it's usually the waves are not too heavy, the winds don't blow too long. And but the downside of being in the Chesapeake Bay is you learn slowly. And what I mean by that is if you are a sailor, anybody can sail a boat when it's 75 degrees out. The wind is not blowing very hard. You're going downwind, and there's not many waves. Okay, that's easy to sail in. And where it is hard to sail in is when it's storming, right? I mean, like, it's 30-mile-an-hour winds. You know, it's raining sideways. You're trying to go upwind, and you're in 6 to 8 foot swells. Okay, that's where you really got to learn how to sail. And so one of the things that we want to do is take advantage of every single storm we run into to develop people. And so, because if you can get people in more storms, you accelerate their learning, okay? And if you accelerate the number of repetitions, you accelerate the learning, you accelerate the development. And so if you, for example, you look at consulting companies, like in the U.S., if you're young and you're trying to develop your business acumen, that is a great place to go. Because consulting companies deal with two things. One, big problems that companies are having. And two, big opportunities. Okay. Both big problems and big opportunities offer you room to grow. And so the more you can put yourself in those situations, the faster you're going to develop. And so one of the things we'll do with our leaders is we'll take advantage of every storm we've got and also opportunities. And we're thinking about, okay, how do I develop the people that I have more quickly by getting them more repetitions. Does that make sense to people? Okay, so just never let a good storm go to waste. That's my advice on that. Okay, so let's move on. Just keep doing, stop doing. Here, you wanna get feedback. Okay, so one of the things good leaders do, especially with their subordinates, is they try to get feedback out of them. And what I would tell you is this is hard to do. Okay? Because most people that work underneath you, they're not gonna give you candid feedback. I mean, they just have no incentive to do that. And so you have to try and figure out a way, if you're going to grow and develop as a leader, to get that feedback. And some companies do that through 360 processes, you know, where you're getting feedback from all directions. You know, other people do it on a less formal basis just by going and asking. And so one of my favorite tricks for getting feedback is going into someone and saying, okay, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, okay, where 1 is, you know, some terrible leader and 10 is Jesus, okay, how do you feel like I'm doing? And what you're trying to do is put the 10 at somebody that's so unattainable that someone says, well, you know, you're a 9 or you're a 9.6. As long as they don't say 10, you're in good shape. Okay, as long as they say, hey, you're a 9.6, then you just got to say, hey, what is one thing, just one thing that I can do better to go from a 9.6 to a 9.7 or from a 8 to an 8.4? Okay, you're trying to get helpful information. Again, what should I keep doing? What should I stop doing? What should I start doing? One thing that's going to help me get better. And then when someone gives you that information, you've got to make sure you thank them and you got to make sure you act on it. And then what that will do is over time, that builds up trust that the people underneath you can tell you the truth. And then they'll be committed to you as well. So you've got to develop this ability. You can do it formally through a 360 system. You can do it informally by asking for that kind of feedback. And you got to resist being defensive. What I would tell you is, listen, anytime anybody says anything to you, it may not be 100% true, but it's at least 1% true. Okay? And if it's at least 1% true, then what is the 1% that I can act on to get better? And so I'm going to do that when I'm working that. And then there's this last comment, which is, you know, a lot of studies have been done, and people just generally say, hey, people don't quit companies, people quit bosses. And so as a leader with subordinates underneath you, right, your job is that people love you, you know, and you're developing them and they feel like you are for them and you're committed to them and you've got them in the right spots to add as much value as they can. And so that's what you want to do. I've got a guy that I work with now that I just, one of the questions I asked him early on was, I say, who's the best boss you ever had? And, you know, he mentions this, the name of this guy, and I'll just say, you know, he says, oh, this guy I had was AJ. You know, and let me, and then I said, well, what made him so good? And I'm listening and I'm taking notes, you know, just mentally. And now when I'm interacting with him, a lot of times I'll just say, hey man, where do I stand on the AJ scale today? Like, how am I doing relative to AJ? You know? And now it's become almost like a joke. But now that I understand, you know, who is a great boss for him and what he wants and expects and needs out of that boss, I can now start providing that. Is that helpful? So it's good to ask people. I mean, I'll do that. Who's the greatest boss you ever had and what made him great? What did you really like about him? Okay, who's the worst boss you ever had and what did you not like about them? You can learn a lot by asking questions and getting feedback. And so, yeah. You mean like me being, like people pleasing, like me doing stuff that I want people to like me for?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's what I would say, is that if you're a people pleaser, that is one of those character issues that you better watch out for or it will get you. Okay, because the job of the leader is to make people grow, and sometimes that's uncomfortable. You know, Tom Landry had a quote. He said, the job of a coach is to make people do things they don't want to do so that they can become the people they've always wanted to become. Okay? And so part of being a leader is pointing out, why are people stuck? And has anybody ever told them that they're stuck? And how do we get them unstuck? And what I would say to you is no matter how diplomatic you are, sometimes you say, hey, guess what? You're stuck. You know, you're doing X, and this is hurting you. That's just not going to be received well. And if I know that ahead of time, I'm doing a couple things to mitigate that. One, I want to make sure I've got trust in the bank with them. Okay. Two, I will caveat it. Well, I'll say, hey, can I just make an observation? I may be totally off on this, but boom, here. You know? And then I know that sometimes if what I am saying is not going to be received well, I'm okay with that. Okay, my goal isn't to get an immediate positive reaction. My goal is for them to go home and think about it and go, you know what? There may be some truth to that. And so if you are going to develop people, I would just say that character, that tendency to want to please people and make everybody happy is going to inhibit your ability to lead, you know, especially when you got to make tough calls. And so am I getting to the answer to your question? Like, I would say, hey, guess what? On the margin, right? No one likes people to be mad at them, you know, or unhappy with them. And so, but if you realize, hey, that's part of my job, that helps you with that. Because if you can't come to terms with that, it's going to make you could be a great leader and you're going to be a mediocre leader. It's just hard to lead through times change. Is that, any thoughts about that?
Well, like with the AJ example, where do I put on the AJ scale?
Yep. Yeah, so I just make it clear, look, my job is to make you good or great, okay? So my job, like, you know, at the firm I'm currently at, my job is that you and I retire together. And as this organization grows, you get more responsibility and you have more influence, right? And you can make a difference with your life and achieve whatever it is you want outside of work, okay? So I want to focus people on that. And then I want people to know that I care about them. And then I'm just going to speak truth to them. And I What I would tell you is my issue is sometimes I will see something in somebody and I'll go, man, that's strange. And I'll wait until I see it again a second time or sometimes a third time before I go, oh, that's an issue. So I am a half step slow to jump into some of those conversations. I'm okay with that. Because if I'm with them 40 hours a week, I'm going to see it over time. You know, and the good news is that keeps me from having false positives, you know, where I'm, but now I can see a pattern. And we'll talk about this a little later, but here's what happens. A lot of times when you say something that people don't want to hear, okay, there's a couple of things they'll do. Like in the church, we do this all the time. You know, like we'll have to say hard things to people. Like, guess what? You know, you need to move towards your spouse, not away from your spouse. Stuff like that. And if people don't like what you're telling them, a lot of times what they'll do is they'll shift the conversation from what you're saying to how you're saying it, okay? So the issue is less about what you told me and the way you told me. The way you told me was unkind or harsh or, you know, that kind of stuff. So that's something that once you're in those conversations enough, you will see that, okay? And what you've got to do is you just got to say, okay, great. I hear what you're saying. You're saying, hey, we've got the issue we're talking about, and now there's an issue about how I'm telling you about it. I want to talk about both of those things. Let's pull those things apart so we can get clarity, but let's talk about them both. And first, let's talk about what I said. Then second, let's talk about how I said it, and because I would love to know a better way I could say that. Okay, that is a very common thing that people will come back to you and say, you said that in a very unloving way. And what they've really done is they've just deflected what it is. A second thing that people will do is if you point out something to them, they will justify, rationalize, or explain it away. Okay? They will want to tell you why what you saw isn't really what you saw. Okay? And so in these kinds of instances, like I'd like to have like three or four examples. Like I'll say, okay, let me give you three or four examples where this issue has surfaced. Okay? Here, 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 and here. Okay? What do you think about that? Am I imagining that? And what'll happen is you know, they'll either say, the way you're saying to this is not kind to me, or they'll want to explain away why every one of those examples isn't what I saw. Do you know what I mean? Like they'll want to debate each one at a deep level. And I'll just say, listen, I don't want to talk about each individual example. I want to talk about the pattern. Because I'm telling you, there's a pattern. And let's talk about that, you know? And if it only happened once and you explain it away, that's very different than if I've seen it four times across like a three-month span. And so what I would tell you is there are some tips and tricks to deal with giving hard news, right? One of them is just watch out if people say, hey, the way you're telling me is, you know, you're unkind or whatever. So it becomes about how you did it as opposed to that you did it. The second thing is they'll want to explain away and rationalize why everything that you saw isn't what you saw. And with just like sailing in storms, you begin to recognize that, and then you can deal with it. When we get there, we'll talk about underperformers, and this is a part of that conversation where we'll talk. You know, look, it's easy to coach great people, right? It's easy to lead gifted, motivated, initiative-taking, you know, value-adding people. That's easy. What's hard is leading people that are in the wrong spots, that are demotivated, that aren't very good at what they do. You know, that's when you earn your leadership money. And so we'll talk about those when we get there. Is that helpful? Okay. Any other questions about this? Yeah.
So I've also heard like this, so we have the
keep,
stop, start.
Yep.
But, I had someone inform me about like the sandwich method where it's like positive, negative, back to a positive.
Yep. You know, they're not dissimilar because if you're saying, hey, here's what I always start with keep doing, right? Which is in essence the positive. And then I'll come back to that. The only thing I don't like about the sandwich method is if you're working with someone smart, right? They're like, yeah, they discount anything you say that's good because like you only said that because now you're going to hit me with a hammer, you know? So yes, you gave me a piece of cake, but now you're going to hit me with the hammer. And so my whole thing is you know, I just want to make sure that people don't feel like I am manipulating them. Like, I'm just trying to make you better. Okay, so let's go on and let's clear up. Leading the peers here, I just want to say, listen, when you are leading peers, okay, you can't tell them what to do. So it becomes even more important that that you build trust in the relationship. Okay, you've got to have trust. And so you have to find ways to add value to their lives so that people know that you are for them. Okay, once you do that, they will be opening up to your influence. And so there's all kinds of ways to do that. Like one of my favorite things is like, I said to you, you know, I read books and then I take notes on them. And I take notes on them so that I can go back and read my notes and remember what the guy wrote, okay? But what I'll do is when I finish a book, I'll think about, okay, who else would benefit from this? Because if I can send it to 4, 5, 6 people, now I'm just adding value to their lives. And what I'm doing in a very small way is just saying, listen, I'm for you. You know, how can I help? And if you do that repeatedly over time, you build trust. And again, listen, over time, if you are faking it, people are gonna know it. And so what we have got to do is we've got to act in a way so that people know that we're genuine about this stuff. And then that opens them up. So if you serve and add value to people, then you open up the ability to influence them. The second thing is rather than telling people what to do, I like to ask questions. That works really well with peers. You know, have you thought about this? Or, well, what if you did that? Or why did that happen? And it's just a less direct way. What you really want to be is a thought partner with that person. And so that's what you're doing. And then the other thing is, look, when you see them doing well, affirm and encourage them. Just make deposits. And we could all say, hey, this just goes back to what Jesus said. You know, I tell you the truth, love one another. You know, just love one another. And if we do that well, people will know. Okay, so let's go on. Let's talk about leading organizations. We've got about 10 minutes. This is the shortest section. So let's get through this. I will stay at 12, answer any questions you've got, but I want to get you out of here. Okay, as a leader, so I told you for 10 years, I was the executive pastor here at Watermark. We had a staff that when I started, it was about 40. When I left, it was about 200. Okay, and if I was in a car accident, and Watermark called you up and said, hey, guess what? John is in the hospital. We want you to come be the executive pastor. You're now in charge of Watermark, okay? So you show up, it's Monday morning at 9:00. What are you gonna do? Because there are 100 things you could do. So you better have a framework for thinking about how you lead an organization, okay? And that is this, okay? If as a leader, you pay attention to 3 things, okay, that will make you an effective leader. Number one is the people. Do you have the right people in the right spots on your team? Okay, are you, when you're hiring, spending time making sure you've got the right person, and what are you doing to develop your people? Okay, if you focus just on the people side, okay, that will get you more than half the way there. And so that is by far the most important lever when you are leading a team or an organization. Okay, so even now at work, I'm always thinking, do we have the right people in the right spots on our team? And who's good at what? How do I get them into a spot where we're taking advantage of that? Okay, how do I develop people? It's all those questions are running through in my mind. Okay, and the best leaders, there's a guy named Larry Bossidy who wrote a book called Execution. He was at General Electric under Jack Welch for a long time and then ran Allied Signal, but you know, considered one of the top 25 business leaders. He says that when the organization was going well, he spent 20% of his time on the people question. When the organization was in a period of transition, he spent 40% of his time on it. But that's how important it was for him to make sure that the leaders were in the right spots. Okay. Then second, you got to have vision, value, strategy, which is basically where are we going? What is the plan? What are we focused on? And what I would tell you here is that average leaders think about programs. Great leaders think about values, okay? And what I mean by that is if you take any issue and you say, hey, you know, let's just say Watermark had a problem with evangelism, okay? Like if we said, no one is telling anybody about Jesus and no one is coming to Christ here. And so if that was the problem, right, an average leader would say, you know what? We need to start a program that's going to train people how to share their faith so that people share their faith, okay? That's like a program-centered approach, okay? A leader is going to go, we've got a problem, okay? It's a values problem. People don't understand that there are lost people that they live next to, work with, you know, play sports with, that if those people die, they're going to hell. And they will be separated from God forever. That's the problem. And if people understand that, if they embrace that value, okay, things are going to change. Now, then I can bring a program in that can help people learn how to share their faith. But if they're not motivated at the start, we're in trouble. Okay, so great leaders are constantly saying, hey, what are the values that we need to drive home? And so, you know, at Watermark, you know, JP's doing a series on outsiders, right? And that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to hit that value that lost people matter to God. And then as a result of that, what should happen? Okay, so they think values first. But people are the key, right? We've got the two levers for getting people. We can hire them, we can develop them. Like I would argue, hiring is the thing that you can do to most improve your team. Okay, because you are getting the skilled players in. In the same way that a football coach would say, if you can get a guy that can run a 4.3 and bench press 300 pounds, I'm going to be able to do a lot more with him than a guy that runs 6 seconds in the 40. But I've got to pull both of those levers. I've got to pull them both, but I just got to make sure I don't underweight the first one. And then the three C's of hiring. If we're looking to hire someone, we're looking for character, we're looking for competency, and we're looking for chemistry, okay? So character is can I trust this guy? Do they have a good work ethic? Are they going to spin stuff, okay? And what we learn about character is character can change, but it's slow to change, you know, in that trust part of it. And so we've got to try and discern what are we getting when we get someone on board. Second, you know, how good are they at what they do? And then the third thing is how well will they fit our culture on our team? All three of those are important. And, you know, when people hire, a lot of times they say a lot of people when they're hiring, they make a hiring decision within the first 2 minutes of the interview, whether they like someone or not. And so we make these snap judgments. And, you know, then depending on how good our radar is, so look, some people are good at that. Other people think they're good at that, but aren't so good at it. And here, what we just want to do is we want to say, listen, there is a skill to doing this. To interviewing people. And one of the skills is we want to focus on behaviors. So what have they done in the past? Past behavior is the best predictor of future performance. So if I'm looking for a leader, I'm going to want to ask them, hey, give me an example of a time you've led in the past. Give me an example when you were leading something and it didn't work. You know, tell me what's the hardest leadership situation you found yourself in. You know, and then I'd give them case studies. Like a case study is a real life business problem that's kind of made up. You know, you just discovered that this is wrong in the business. What are you going to do? And what I am trying to tease out from them is from an experience standpoint, what have they done? And would that be a good fit? Okay. And the last thing down here is interviewing is hard. Okay. So you're always best if you're in an organization to hire from within because you know someone's character and that's hard to discern in a short interview. And so at a place like Watermark, you know, like 85 to 90% of the hires here are hiring from people who are already volunteering. Because what the leaders here can do is they can say, I know who's faithful, I know their character, I know what they're good at, I've watched them over time. And so, you know, in Fortune 500 companies, leaders that are hired from within, like into the top three slots, the CEO, the CFO, and the COO. Okay, so think about those top three positions in a company. In the S&P 500, there's 500 of those companies. So there's 1,500 positions, you know. And so what they've done is they've done studies and they've looked at who was hired in from the outside into one of those three positions and who was hired internally. And people that were hired internally had a 90% success rate of succeeding in the role. You know, it's determined by company performance and longevity and a whole bunch of other things. People that were hired from outside had a 50% chance. And so it just goes to show you there is a distinct advantage to adding people if you already know them, if you're already working with them. You know, how do you create opportunities to see people? And so, like, you know, when we're hiring for our company, it's if someone has worked with someone in the past, I mean, that's like gold. Because the interviewing process is hard. Okay? So that's essentially the interviewing. Now, let's finish by talking about underperformers. And so what I would say is, remember, it's easy to lead people if they're good. Okay? What is hard is leading people when they're not good. So if you discern someone is not good, what do you do about it? And so this is just a sense to say, listen, if someone is not doing well, the very first thing you got to do is make sure there's clarity around expectations. Because even if you think you've been clear about it, somewhere along the line, you may have, you know, look, I think excellence is up here, and they think excellence is doing down here. And guess what? There's this gap. And I've got to make sure they're clear that excellence is up here. Okay, once I've established that, though, if they're still not thriving, there's usually one of three reasons. Okay. The first reason, which is the easiest to fix, is a lack of knowledge. Okay? They just don't know how to do it. Okay? If I discern that someone has a lack of knowledge, the answer is I am now going to train them how to do it. There is a great book. It's an old book. It's called What Every Manager Should Know About Training. And in the book, the guy essentially says, listen, the purpose of training is to teach people how to do something that they don't know how to do. Okay? It's not to educate people, it's to help them do something that they can't do. So if you have someone in a role and the problem is they don't know how to do it or they can't do it, right? The thing is, okay, let me train you how to do this. That's the first thing. If that's not working, you know, it could be they have a poor attitude or they're not motivated. And so if that's the issue, right, I've got to identify it and then I've just got to call it out. And what I've got to realize is that, you know, sometimes if you tell people that, it will shock them out of that. But more often than not, right, that's a habit pattern. And sometimes with people, it's just going to take time to get them out of the habit pattern. And so you got to decide, is it worth, yeah. How do I, with leaving them in place? Yeah, okay, so I might say, hey, guess what? You know what? You're really good at what you do. And look, you're doing this well, this well, this well. But guess what? You know, people don't like working with you. And here's why. You know, that's an issue. Or I might say, hey, guess what? You know, we need someone who, if they work till 5 o'clock and they're checking out mentally at 4:15, okay? I'm okay with that if your work's done. If your work's not done, get your job done. And there's times when that checks out. There's times when people spin stuff. Nothing is ever their fault. So you just got to be on the lookout for those things. What is inhibiting their performance that if they stop doing will make them better? And those are those things. And so, you know, you'll see it and then show up. And then the last one is they're in the wrong role. Okay. They're just not good at it. And what's really hard here in a company is, again, if 10 is great and 1 is terrible, it's easy to spot people that are 9s and 10s. Okay, that is not hard. It's easy to spot people that are 1s and 2s, like that are just terrible. Okay, where you wrap yourself around the axle as a leader is someone a 4, a 5, or a 6. Okay, you can spend hours trying to figure that out. And in many instances, it's the wrong question. The right question is, can that person get to be a 9 or a 10? And if the answer is no, then you got to find a new role for them. You know, if there's not a new role, they got to go find something that they're good at. A bad strategy is to lease like a 4, a 5, or a 6 in a key role because you don't want to address the issue. Now, churches are notoriously bad about that. Okay, they're like, what you just got to understand is that is not loving. You want to put persons in a position where they can add as much value as they can. And both, whether it's in the church or it's in your business world, you will find that there's people, they're just in the wrong roles. When I find someone is in the wrong role, okay, what I find is you don't want to move them away from stuff. You want to move them toward stuff, okay? And by that, I mean, you know, okay, listen, in this role, you know, you're okay at this role, but there are a couple things that you do excellently that if I think if we put you in this other role over here, you would thrive. You know, you would add more value, you would grow more quickly, you'd be more valuable to us, okay? You know, I think we need to make that change with you, okay? So what I want to do is I want to lead people towards stuff, not away from stuff. I don't want to say, guess what, you suck at this, you know? And you got to get better, okay? If I discern that it's not a motivation attitude issue and it's not a training issue, okay, it's just they're not gifted at it, okay, it's now my job as a leader. Because I got to get the right people on the right spots on my team to get them into a spot where they can be a 9 or a 10. And if I don't have that spot on my team, now I got to start thinking about, is there another organization where they could go be a 9 or a 10? Okay, but you're not leading well if you leave someone as a 4 or 5 in a role. Okay, and so we're going through this, by the way, very quickly, but this is exceedingly painful to walk through. And it's, I think, one of the hardest things leaders do in an organization is what happens when you got the wrong person in the spot? How do you make that transition? And so you got to figure it out. You got to decide if it's a training issue, an attitude issue, or a giftedness issue. If it's a giftedness issue, now I've got to think about transferring them out. Okay, but I think that's love because it's what's best for them and it's what's best for the organization. So I'm going to stop there. It is 12:06. I'll take one or two questions, but then, hey, I'll stick around as long as you want.
Is there any way that the remaining stuff there, we email you, you can kind of outline it?
Yeah, so let's, so we talked about, you know, the values. Three types of values are just, look, everybody has three sets of values. The first set is values. There are things that you want other people to think are true about you, but that aren't. Like, yeah. Yeah. Well, I can. We can do it. You can do it, or we can get together another time. I'm happy to do that. Okay? Terrific. All right, so let's see if there's anything else here. Yeah, we'll cover the rest of this stuff at some other time. Thank you for coming. It's been great having you. Hopefully, again, remember, two or three things that if you implement will make a material difference in each of these areas. Okay? Have a great afternoon.